Fellow Freedom fans back, David Allen Carmichael here on the Eagle 104.3 FM, talking to Jerry Ward, who's got an exciting case, I think, that matters to you. We're going to get into some of the details of this case because there's times you got to connect the dots. We got to follow the yellow brick road so we can find our way back to Kansas. So that's what we're going to do, is we're going to connect the dots on this case that's in Texas. And again, I tell you that you need to hear this, just essentially what this case is, because ultimately we're going to step back a little bit and look at the macro. We're not the micro. We're going to deal with the micro first, then we're going to step back and give a little macro look and see why this is so important. Because we're at a critical time, folks. You got to admit it. There's a lot of weird things happening, and as Bob Dylan once said, the times they are a change. And I'm sorry I didn't have a guitar to go with that, but my harmonicas are right next to me. Maybe I'll bring that up later. So Jerry Ward, again, I've been goofing off. That's what happens. You get on the radio with a microphone. But tell us again, you said just before the break that the case was, and that's really what I want you to do. Explain to the folks, you said that the case was based on a federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and it was based on a Texas Religious Freedom Act, because there was a Texas case, Bernie versus Flores, that said, and I'll review that for our listeners, that the state religious, or the federal Religious Freedom Act can't, because of the boundaries of the Constitution, it can't just apply to Texas, you know, to the average guy in Texas, unless there's some kind of federal matter involved. But so you're suing on both the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of the federal and the Texas State Religious Freedom Act. And you said that they've got to be, they basically can't put a substantial burden on this guy's religious thing, where he can't, in good faith, ever identify himself with a social security number because of his religion. Because he can't do that, the state can't say, okay, we're going to cut you off from your livelihood access because you can't conform to our administrative norm. And you say that the state has to demonstrate that there's a compelling interest that overrides religion. And then even if they can prove a compelling interest, they got to see if there's not a lesser restrictive means to possibly accomplish this compelling interest without making the guy forsake his faith. I mean, that's kind of the layman's terms to say it, but the things, when you told me that before the break, the things that came to my mind was compelling interest. Okay, what is a compelling interest? I mean, are there different interests? What makes something a compelling interest? And then I'll probably ask you a couple other questions.
Well, as far as I can tell, a compelling interest these days has to do with anything that the judges decide is a compelling governmental interest, because I have to tell you, I haven't been that impressed by the federal or state governments' protection of individual liberties, because in a lot of cases it seems to me that they bow before government power before individual liberties. But I think that these religious restoration acts have been pretty effective in turning that back. In fact, we just had a case come out here in Texas, Texas Supreme Court case, the Barr versus the city of Stinton, where our Supreme Court ruled in favor of the ministry. In this case, it was a ministry that basically ministered to ex-convicts. They had a halfway house for ex-convicts and were working on trying to help them go back into the community. And the city of Stinton had a ordinance that said you can't have any kind of corrective facility of that type within the city limits, and the argument of the ministry was, hey, this is a ministry. We're protected by our religious freedoms. This is not just a corrective unit. This is a religious ministry. And the court found that although the state has or the governmental entity has a compelling interest in having ordinances and protecting the interior of their municipality against certain acts happening, that in this particular case they did not use the least restrictive means of affecting that, and that therefore this ministry could continue within the city limits.
Now, I hadn't heard, I'd actually seen something on that case, but I hadn't seen the results, so that's exciting. And I was a little bit worried because it was a zoning ordinance thing, so that gets a little bit tricky. But it does get, when you come to the point where, say, our religion in Christianity forever has been to restore these people. And so if you can't restore anybody in the city, that means that religion can't happen in the city, right? That's effectively it, right?
This is an age-old issue here in Texas, because I don't know if any of your listeners remember Lester Roloff, the great Baptist evangelical here in Texas, who in the 60s and 70s started children's homes for wayward children. He had boys' homes and girls' homes. And the state began a fight with him in the 70s to have to license those homes, which would have totally destroyed the Christian faith of those ministries, because once you get a license for children's homes, you have to bring in psychologists, psychiatrists, you have to bring in all sorts of humanistic type of treatment, which was totally antithetical to his Christian ministry. And this is just a way for the state to encroach upon the authority of other entities over which they should have no authority in these kinds of matters, such as the church, the family, the localities, local societies, that sort of thing. So this is not a new issue. These entities can use zoning ordinances, they can use federal mandates, they can use things of that nature, not just to rid the country of its Christian nature, but also to control every aspect of our lives. So even if you're not a Christian, you are threatened by the state's overreaching in these kinds of areas.
If the state can beat out religion, you're done.
Excuse me?
I was saying, if the state can beat out religion, you're done. I mean that means that covers everybody. Everybody's freedoms are gone once they tackle religion.
Right now, it appears to me that we have one little island left, and that's an island that's protected by these Religious Freedom Restoration Acts, as far as the government is concerned. And you can bet that they're going to start trying to beat those things back, because the government wants control over every aspect of your life.
Well, here's a question I have, too. I'm a little bit miffed that they said that the government had a compelling interest. And I'm going to talk to you about that word demonstrate. It seems that I've been reviewing these cases, and what I see is arguably reasonable interest of government or legitimate interest of government, but not compelling. Compelling is if my religion says I have to go sacrifice my next door neighbor on a Wednesday night at a full moon, the government has a compelling interest to protect my neighbor's right to not be sacrificed on Wednesday at the full moon. Or the government actually has a compelling interest to protect your right to exercise religion. I mean, as I understand it, the government's compelling interest is basically those things that government was designed exactly expressly to do. And then there are lesser interests like and reasonable interests, legitimate interests. Well, for public safety, there's a reasonable ordinance. I think that's really what was going on. But when the court says it's a compelling governmental interest, they have just elevated general administration and zoning things up to the highest purpose of government. Have you ever thought about that?
Well, yes. I mean, that's one of my points, is that the courts are finding compelling interests on behalf of the government in areas that I don't think should be compelling governmental interests. But, you know, judges and courts are governmental entities.
Yes.
They're not independent from the government, so what do you expect?
Okay, now what about the word demonstrate? I noticed in the Texas statute, I just read it today, I've read different state statutes where they actually tell you what demonstrate means, but they don't define compelling governmental interest in the statute, nor do they define demonstrate. What is it really? You're the lawyer.
The way I would interpret that is that places the burden of proof on the governmental agency to essentially show that their law or their restrictions on activity are in furtherance of a compelling government interest and are the least restrictive means. So to me, that denotes that they are shifting the burden to the government to make these proofs rather than the individual proving that it's not a compelling governmental interest or the least restrictive means.
And what I've seen, you know, again, preparing for this and having some information and some dealings with it, what I see is that the government doesn't really go get the facts, lay out in facts to the court to say, here's all the facts, government. You know, it's supposedly demonstrate is better than persuasion. You know, they're supposed to be like, you know, here's A through Z. And look, court, look how demonstrated this is, rather than just, but it seems what I see is they just kind of say it. And then they, oh, the court says because the lawyer said the word compelling interest, they presume that it's true. I mean, I don't know. Did you look into the Barr case? And then take that from there. What's happening in the particular case with Mr. MacArthur and his situation with, I mean, is the government really demonstrating a compelling interest? Have they raised that?
In which case, the Barr case?
Yeah, I'm saying you've looked into the Barr case. Did they actually demonstrate it, or did they just mention it in court?
Well, the most of the argument I saw had to do with the reasonable restriction.
Okay. So they just said, well, okay, even if it was compelling interest, we still have the reasonable there's got to be some mechanism to make sure there's no way to accommodate it kind of thing. Now,
yeah, well, they do. You know, they do discuss what a substantial burden is, and they discuss that some courts find that it's a burden on his religious beliefs rather than a burden on his conduct. They kind of go through all that, but I believe that what they most focus on in their holding here is the reasonable restriction.
Okay. Well, folks, I'm going to tell you what you're listening to. I'm David Allen Carmichael. This is Eagle 104.3. This is my Faith and Freedom Show. I talk about the issues on a day on a constitutional basis, a biblical basis, a basis of right versus wrong. The reason I do that is because it's a reference, folks. We want to know what the benchmark is. The Liberty for America benchmark was based on a biblical worldview, and that government could not intrude upon your particular beliefs, no matter whether it was Christian or Native American or whatever. It was just outside the authority of government to do so, and they'd be doing a great wrong if they took it upon themselves, because the Christians believed ultimately there's going to be a judgment day. So all that stuff would all essentially be taken care of. It will all come out in the wash. So and we were talking about this case. Jerry Ward is here from Garlow Ward PC. She's got a client who tried to renew his pesticide license that he had been getting for a long, long time so he could continue his crop dusting career. And he's not a deadbeat dad or deadbeat granddad, but when he could not, because of his conscience and his obligation of religion that he'd been practicing for many years, he couldn't identify with a Social Security number because of a biblical prohibition. They said, well, unless you conform to this norm, that because on the basis of Section 666 of the Federal Welfare Code, we're not going to let you even apply for the renewal of your pesticide license, even though you're qualified and have fulfilled every testing requirement and everything like that. We're just going to say no. And of course, try to work without the appropriate license. So that's his case. Now, in Gene MacArthur's case, you guys have filed suit both on the Federal Religious Freedom Act and the Texas Religious Freedom Act. And so what's the stage of that litigation right now?
Of Gene's case?
Yes.
Well, right now we're working on attempting to do our own motion for summary judgment. We've already survived one motion for summary judgment, our partial summary judgment based on whether the federal law applies. We've survived that, and now we'd like to turn things around and file our own motion for summary judgment, asserting that it's a substantial burden, and going ahead and filing that, and judge will rule in our favor.
Okay, we're going to come back in a break here, folks, and we're going to look at the details. And again, our ultimate goal, I've talked to Jerry Ward about that. She's going to help me. We're going to try to take this to where it matters with you, why you should be concerned about this. It's coming to a neighborhood near you soon. And we'll be back on the Eagle 104.3 FM. We shall return.